This episode is brought to you by Calm. Meditation does not come with an instruction manual unless you are using the app Calm, and then it does. But Calm has a lot more than just meditation. There's music, stories, stuff for sleep. For listeners of this show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off of a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/CanadaLand, calm.com/CanadaLand for 40% off of unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by Douglas. It has been said that sleep is the cousin to death, but I tend to disagree. I think that sleep is actually the cousin to life, and that is why I recommend investing in a Douglas mattress. To life, people, Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle valued at up to $650 with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Jan Wong, journalist, author, hello.
Hi.
Today on the show, Jan, from Winnipeg to Wuhan, we've got spies. And what does Brian Mulroney have to do to be regarded as the greatest Canadian prime minister in history? I think we just found out. Welcome back to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news. Listen, we keep getting emails from you saying that we need to focus on the state of labor work, and labor reporting is kind of dead as a beat, and it's really important right now, you know, from the labor crisis, shutting down emergency rooms, inflation, the rising cost of living. It's a big deal, and it seems like it's something that people want us to cover. And so the new season of Commons is doing just that. It will dig into the fascinating history and ever-changing present of what it means to be a worker in Canada. And we have a taste of the new season for you at the end of this episode, so do stick around once Shortcuts is over. This episode is brought to everybody by Patty Pegues, Michael Lenoble, Clayton Caswell, Lisa Swinton, Jenny Henkelman, Justin Henry, Leah Watkiss, and William.
Hello, I'm William Denton, a librarian, artist, and licensed private investigator in Toronto. I started supporting Canada Land back when because I liked the media criticism and investigative journalism, and a little bit to stop the damn mattress ads. I keep on for all the same reasons, plus now, it's a unionized workplace. I never miss an episode of Commons or Wag the Doug, and I like it on Shortcuts when people like Sandy Garasino, Nora Loretto, and Jan Wong interrupt and manage to get a word in.
Jan, I'm going to take you back in time some years now. Do you remember this story about those two scientists in Winnipeg?
Very vaguely.
Good morning.
Dr. Zhango Chu has been recognized by the Governor General's Innovation Awards. She and the team at the National Microbiology Lab have been praised for developing an Ebola vaccine. But just over a week ago, Chu, her husband, and her students from China were evicted from Canada's only Level 4 lab, their security access revoked.
We don't know why Drs. Chu and Chang were fired. We don't know how a scientist from the People's Liberation Army gained access to the Winnipeg lab.
When it comes to questions about whether the two former federal scientists were spying for China,
I'm not aware of what you mentioned.
Today, a Chinese official deflected.
There's no reason for Ottawa to be secretive about this. We already know that they've sent Ebola virus to China and that they're working with the Chinese military scientists. This is known. What else are they hiding?
This was all very murky back when the news broke. And to run through the bare bones of it, you have this couple who had been working at the Canadian National Microbiology Laboratory in Winnipeg since 2003. The superstar of this couple, they're a married couple, was Dr. Chu, who won the 2018 Canadian Governor General's Innovation Award for an Ebola drug. This all played out before the coronavirus pandemic. In August 2020, their security clearances were suspended. They were fired in 2021. It became a political issue. The Conservatives seized upon it that, you know, Trudeau is hiding. And it became also fodder for conspiracy sites because there were, like, of course, everyone was very curious about virology and Chinese research into weapons and foreign interference. So Justin Ling, writing about this a couple of years ago in Maclean's, about how this got politicized, and he wrote, you know, conservative members of parliament, this is a quote, have further called Chu's removal an odd coincidence in light of the COVID-19 outbreak, winking to the theory that the virus originated in the Wuhan lab and accusing the Trudeau government of a quote-unquote cover-up and quote-unquote corruption in the case. But the accusation smacked of a conclusion in search of evidence. So that's what Ling wrote. And he said, you know, whatever the explanation, it's high time for Ottawa and the RCMP to clarify what exactly Chu is alleged to have done. And again, he was putting that question to Ottawa and the RCMP 2 years ago. Well, Jan, we finally have some of those answers.
Finally.
They went through this long bureaucratic process of what information to share because, you know, all kinds of national secrets had to be protected. And when they finally dumped the documents, like, they're very lightly redacted. And Steve Chase at the Globe and Mail recently appeared on their podcast, The Decibel, to reveal what these documents finally told us.
These documents explained why the government dismissed these two scientists. This whole episode began in 2018, according to these documents, when the public health agency suddenly learns that she's a listed inventor of a Chinese patent that, in fact, may contain research she did at the Winnipeg lab. She and Mr. Cheng had essentially lied, covered up, and refused to reveal the full scale of their cooperation with China until evidence was presented to them.
Wow.
Part of the documents that were released were the CSIS investigation, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. You know, the documents revealed what it called a close and clandestine relationship with a variety of entities in the People's Republic of China. One thing they found out, for instance, is that Dr. Chu had a whole different resume, a whole different CV in China compared to the one she used in Canada. They discovered she had a bank account in China that she hadn't revealed. She was approved to participate in a project at Wuhan Virology Institute that would look at cross-species infection and pathogenic risks of bat filoviruses. Work that the service said suggests gain-of-function studies were possibly to take place. She also said an October 2018 trip to China that she had told her employers was a personal vacation. She later acknowledged, after being presented with the evidence, that their trip was paid for by the Wuhan Institute for Virology. CSIS discovered that Chu was nominated for an International Cooperation Award by China's Academy of Military Medical Sciences for using Canada's Level 4 biosecurity lab as a base to assist China. CSIS said she was reckless in her dealings with institutions whose goals have potentially lethal military applications that are manifestly not in the interest of Canada or its citizens.
Okay. Sounds like we learned a few things.
Right. It was very interesting, but it took so long to come out. I think that it didn't have a big impact, but it actually is a very important report, a very important document.
Yeah, this was everywhere when it was happening. It was a major scandal. We talk about foreign interference in terms of like election interference, which is concerning, but the notion that like this is one of the biggest questions in the world about coronavirus. And a very strong concerning like, wow, we have a level four lab here in Winnipeg and they have this level four lab in Wuhan. These were legitimate questions. And I think the press was all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Globe comes out with not full answers, but quite a bit of substantiation here. I mean, she was working on gain of function. That is research into helping viruses get more potent.
And I find it really interesting that she's working in such a sensitive area. And she goes back to China, which is setting up this very similar lab in Wuhan. Canada was ahead of the Wuhan lab. Wuhan did not know how to create this high security bio level lab, and she was helping them. And of course, China is not a democracy. China is a dictatorship. China has all kinds of designs on the South China Seas and Taiwan. It's not an ally. It looks like Canada was very, very, very lax in monitoring her.
Kudos to Steve Chase for sticking on this. I mean, seems like a pretty obvious one for media to stay on when others have lost interest in one of the biggest questions in the world. I will note, though, in Globe and Mail fashion, he doesn't get ahead of himself, but he doesn't even touch the issue. He kind of lays out, here's what the documents tell us, which point very strongly to this other conversation about where coronavirus comes from, but he does not engage with that question. Does Dr. Chu, does this national security breach, this research, does it have a connection with the coronavirus. And, you know, my best guess is because it's not verified. He can't substantiate any solid links. He just avoids the topic entirely.
Yeah, he shouldn't avoid the topic because there is no substantiated link. No one can find it. But partly that's because China has not cooperated with the delegations from the UN and from the West who want to look at that lab, the virology lab in Wuhan, because that lab is very close to the food market in Wuhan, where they found early COVID transmissions. So they have not cooperated, but it's a huge cloud over this. The Chinese scientist, Dr. Chu, was working on Ebola and made big successes in Ebola, which of course is not COVID, but there is this COVID link with Wuhan, right? That's mm-hmm. where we know that it started. There have always been questions of where did this COVID virus come from? And this has not been answered. So I guess Steve Chase or the Globe editors decided, well, we just can't talk about it. But actually, I think you should talk about it. I think you need to talk about it and make it clear that you're not saying it is, but you have to ask all the questions. You might not have all the answers, but a good journalist should always ask all the questions to at least let the reader or the listener know, yeah, we're aware of this, we're thinking of this, but this is all we have at the moment. You shouldn't just not mention it. It's a very important story because this is one lab, this is a couple of Chinese scientists, but I think it's happening not just in Canada, but all over the world. This is part of China's push to get knowledge and technology back to China. And they have a program. It's called the 1,000 Talents Program. But they pay the scientists here in the West to recruit ethnic Chinese scientists who may or may not be Chinese citizens, but usually are not. They pay them to get the information. And in the US, they arrested somebody who was getting a payment from this talent program and didn't disclose it. And this scientist in Canada, Dr. Chu, she was involved in this program too. Mm-hmm. So it's quite nefarious.
And they didn't arrest her here. She and her husband, I think their kids, they got away and they're in China.
How do you know that? I just know that no one has found her. How do you know she's in China?
The Globe reports that their house in Winnipeg is abandoned and that she showed up in Chinese research and she showed up on Chinese social media.
On WeChat. But yeah. I can use WeChat here. It doesn't mean I'm in China. Her house is rented out.
Uh-huh.
And the tenants communicate with her, the owner, by WeChat. But anybody can be on WeChat. I don't know where she is. I assume she's in China, but listen to this. China does not allow dual citizenship. She had to be a Canadian citizen, I believe, to work in that lab. And she talked about how happy she was to be a Canadian. So she's a Canadian citizen. And of course, she can go live in China. And you're probably right. That's probably where she is.
No, I think you're right to check me there, because that was the suggestion and the insinuation I took from the Globe, kind of like, here are all the footprints of her being in China.
Right.
I took from that, oh, she's in China. But actually, you're correct. They do not actually conclude that they can't place her there. What she's not is in custody here in Canada, where they could question her and get to the bottom of this. So, Jan, unlike in America, where they actually laid charges, I don't believe that Dr. Chu has ever been charged with anything, but she has disappeared.
I think you're right. I wish someone would find her.
It's kind of a thriller, isn't it? Like, it's international intrigue. But, you know,
yeah. We
did a couple of episodes about daring to look at this very controversial and conspiracy-laden thing of, like, where did coronavirus come from? And has this been so muddied and clouded up with lies and conspiracy theory that we'll never know? And we did an episode with Elaine Dewar, who wrote a book about this, and another one with scientist Angie Rasmussen, who kind of presented two different points of view on this. I don't know at all which one is correct, but my understanding is that we are still at a point where the lab leak theory is still a very likely contender for where this came from. And are we ever going
to
know?
But to point out, China was one of the earliest and most severely hit by the COVID virus, right?
Which suggests that whether this was being developed, you know, if we're going to take this hypothesis, whether it was being developed as a biological weapon or for legitimate purposes, this was not unleashed upon the world as an act of biological warfare, but as an accident.
Yeah, which is really interesting. And in Wuhan, where they have this level 4 lab, which they were putting together, you know, based on help from this Winnipeg Chinese scientist. So it's so fascinating. And it's such a pain that the government took so long to release it, because I think they were embarrassed.
For sure.
Because as you point out, very little was redacted. So what were they hiding? Why did it take so long?
Well, we look like clowns. You know, like, she was not a very sophisticated international agent. She was going back and forth, applying for grants, putting her name on patents. Like, if her level of subterfuge is like leaving a few credentials off of her CV, and she was able to function here for almost two decades.
Yeah, we look pathetic. Our security looks pathetic. Our government looks pathetic. And you know what? I think it's just the whole notion of being Canadian. We ask her, oh, you're on these patents in China. She goes, oh, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, okay, bye. Have a nice day. See you later.
This episode is brought to all by Article. Jan, you strike me as a person who would be a fan of stylish furniture.
I do like it. I like to look, though. I don't buy any.
You can look on Article's website. It's a really fun website to click around. They do have very stylish stuff. It's like, you know, there's like that really high-end design within something, something. But this is like, it looks every bit as good to me, but the prices are surprisingly affordable, and the process of shopping on Article and getting the stuff sent to you, and then it shows up and it looks even better than on the website. I got this stuff in our office. I got it in my home. We have a couple of new couches in the office here, and it's just become a really pleasant, you can just kind of move from your desk to the couch area.
What style is it?
We sort of like a mixture of, I like the kind of like the teak, the mid-century modern stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Scandinavian, they'd have like bohemian, like, but in the office, it's sort of like, it's a bit more modern around here. You know, we're trying to like, kind of like strike a balance. That's a long-winded way of saying, like, I actually don't know the name of the style. It looks nice to me. Listen, if you want to try out Article and go from looking at their wonderful website to actually having something sent to you, the deal is fantastic. $50 off of your first purchase of $100 or more. They've got some like small little accoutrements and decor, so you could actually get like pretty much a 50% discount with that. To claim this, visit article.com/CanadaLand, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That is article.com/CanadaLand for $50 off of your first purchase of $100 or more. Jan, let us duly note a bunch of things that people need to know more about. I'm going to kick us off here. People should be more familiar with our FOI, whatever you want to call it, ATIP system, our Freedom of Information system in Canada, than they are. One aspect of our access to information system is that as hard as it is to request information from the government, I'll leave aside all the frustrations about how long it takes to get documents, it takes a long time, and how redacted they are. But once the government has provided that, it's supposed to be easier for the next person who needs that same information or wants it. They can piggyback the initial request. And that's also supposed to save the bureaucracy from having to go through the whole thing again. However, to actually do that is itself a bureaucratic hurdle, and people don't really have an easy way of finding out what requests have been made and what they can piggyback. And then once the documents are released, it's not easy to access those already released documents. And that's why the Globe and Mail rolled out this project called Secret Canada in 2022. And they rolled this out with all the fanfare of a Globe and Mail, you know, Michelin Award targeted piece of very serious center. It had graphic design and it had videos, and it was not just articles about the access to information system and what was being revealed, but it was a resource where you could search through all of the documents the government had released and see if there was something. You could search for a keyword, see if you're in there. The thing is, all you could get from it was that a document existed.
Oh, that's useless. Yeah, that's no good.
And then it would like link you to the page you could go to then go request it yourself. When they were revealing this and rolling it out, Robin Doolittle explained, like, it's just impossible. She said, like, we can't do that. It's a non-starter. I'm quoting from what she wrote. For one thing, it would be astronomically expensive, as public bodies would probably want to re-vet each file. Even aggregating already posted documents had to be scratched from our wish list when we got back quotes about how much this would cost to store tens of thousands of PDFs. And the number would grow exponentially each year. So we regrouped and we decided the next best thing was to make it as easy as possible for people to get the documents themselves. And so that's what we did. It's not perfect, but it's workable, is what Robin Doolittle said. Fair enough, I guess. But you know what just happened?
What?
This tiny little outfit that just launched not long ago, the Investigative Journalism Foundation, they did it. So if listeners don't remember, we've talked about them before, but the Investigative Journalism Foundation is the very small nonprofit that launched not long ago at all, and it's just a handful of journalists doing public interest investigative journalism. They just launched Open by Default, And they have online the full documents for 20,000 and growing completed federal access to information documents.
Wow. That's great.
How could they do that? The Globe and Mail has billionaires funding the Globe and Mail. So this tiny little investigative journalism foundation has it. And so what did I do? I searched for myself.
Of course you did.
The government might not have had files on Dr. Chu, but they do have files on Jesse Brown. I don't know if you could call these files. I don't keep like the Jesse Brown file, but I mentioned again and again, the RCMP has me. They're really just doing media monitoring of like what people are saying about the RCMP. But when I was like in Saskatchewan doing a panel on how the RCMP mismanaged the Colton Bushy killing, they were like watching me to see what I was saying and what my forum, what my panelists were saying around the We Charity stuff, the Kielburgers. Government was keeping files on that. Like, it's really interesting to see what they find interesting.
Anything about themselves they find interesting.
That's it. I'm searching for myself, and they're searching for themselves. And that's the world right now. Everybody just searches for themselves.
Duly noted.
Jan, what would you like to duly note?
I have to duly note something that isn't going to happen. So this week, China announced that the premier would no longer hold a press conference at the end of the legislative session that's just started. Now, I have to unpack some of that. When China has a legislative session, it's not like a Western democracy legislative. It's not really. It's just a lot of meetings. So for the past 30 years, they've always had this press conference at the end of the legislative session. And now suddenly they've announced they're not. And some Western media are wringing their hands and going, oh, we have so little access. Now we don't even have this. And I would just like to say, good. I'm glad they're not having a press conference because it was all crap anyway. And it was window dressing to make the Chinese government look like it was a normal government, that where it would have, you know, leaders talking to the press after a big event. But also, people are saying, Western experts are saying, this shows that Xi Jinping is getting stronger and trying to keep the premier out of the limelight. And I would say, actually, this shows how frail and fragile Xi Jinping is. Not that he's strong, but that he's getting nervous.
Huh.
He promoted this person strictly on the basis of loyalty. This has been Xi Jinping. He's been doing an extraordinary job of amassing 100% of the power. And for him to cut Li Qiang's press conference out, it means he doesn't want to give him any attention. And that's, I think, usually because someone's afraid of you, not because someone's confident. And finally, I'd like to say that when I was a reporter in Beijing for 6 years, I tried to avoid press conferences at all costs because they were a total waste of time. You were like a potted plant. You were just there to give the illusion of a free press. And I have a friend named Jimmy Flor Cruz, who was, I guess, the Newsweek correspondent. And he's Filipino, so of course he gets mistaken for a Chinese. And he told me that when he went to one of these big meetings as a journalist, somebody handed him an envelope. And he didn't think anything of it. He went to his seat, and then he opened it up. And inside was cash, because they thought he was a Chinese reporter.
Uh-huh.
And they were paying him cash. And I think, God damn it, that's the only time I didn't go. I should have gone and got my cash. So I just think it's actually progress not to have those stupid press conferences. And I'd like to point out that, I guess last week, Biden sent out Kamala Harris. We never hear from Kamala Harris, right?
Mm-hmm.
But last week when she had to ask for a temporary ceasefire in Gaza, which is like very unpopular, probably going to fail, he sent out Kamala Harris because he doesn't want to wear the failure. So anytime a leader sort of lets the deputy talk or not talk, it's always significant and it's never what you think.
Duly noted. I need to duly note how dangerous things are getting for everybody involved at the protests over the Middle East conflict. The context, of course, what's fueling the protests is Gaza, the daily documentation of relentless carnage and suffering and death. Last Sunday, the Aisha Torah Synagogue in Thornhill was protested by pro-Palestine demonstrators. At the same event, a counter-protest. It was organized by a former leader of the radical militant group, the Jewish Defense League. So one of these counter-protesters pulls up in an SUV, and you can see the guy in videos from the event brandishing a nail gun and firing it at protesters. And he hit more than one of them. It does not seem that he caused anyone serious injury. Some of the protesters thought at first that he had a real gun. And the guy with the nail gun says, every fucking Palestinian will die. Every fucking Palestinian. You can see him knocking the cell phone out of one protester's hand before being pushed away by another protester, whom he pushes back. And then the man with the nail gun appears to threaten to box an elderly woman. So the whole incident lasts for about a minute before he jumps back into his SUV. They got him. Ilan Rubin Abramov, 27 years old, has been arrested on several charges, including possession of weapons dangerous to the public, assault with a weapon, and two additional counts of assault. There is no mention in the reporting about this that he has been charged with hate speech. And that is a question that I found myself asking about all of this. As for the pro-Palestine event itself, the CBC quoted one protester saying, quote, "We weren't there because it's a synagogue. We were there because we were protesting a real estate show. These events should not be allowed to happen when they're explicitly advertising land on occupied territory." And the CBC report says that the protesters believed that they were selling land in the occupied West Bank. But the Toronto Star reported something different. I'll quote from the Star's report. "This seems to have been a reference to a separate event planned for Thursday at another synagogue. There's no indication that Sunday's presentation at the synagogue addressed the West Bank. Protest organizers told the Star that while they could have been clearer in distinguishing between the two events, ultimately they believe all Israeli land is stolen and any attempt at selling it is worthy of protest." Then, on Monday night, there was a protest in Montreal outside of a building that is the home to a number of Jewish institutions, including the Holocaust Museum. The protesters said that they chose this venue as a place to protest because IDF soldiers were speaking at an event inside. Video from that protest shows one protester yelling, "Death to Jews," in Arabic. We were able to independently confirm that that is what he was saying. And another protester seems to be giving the Nazi salute. The next day, a protest was held outside of the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue in Montreal, which was also hosting one of these real estate and Israel fairs. And this one reportedly did involve the selling of real estate in illegal West Bank settlements. No physical violence was reported at either of these Montreal events. Videos of the protest at the Montreal synagogue show a pro-Palestine protester, and he is addressing the crowd. He's got the mic. He's amplified. He's got the mic, and he's directing his comments to another group of counter-protesters, and they look like they're set up, I don't know, like 100 feet across from him. And he repeatedly addresses them as Jews. And you can hear those protesters chanting, "Send them home," which is the slogan that's being used to call for the release of the hostages. If the pro-Israel or the counter-protesters are yelling anything else back at this guy, you can't hear it in the video. What you can hear is this guy's speech against the Jews, as he puts it. And one of the things that he says to them is this, and I'll quote right from the video here. "All of you are finally going to get kicked out of Palestine. The state of Israel will be dismantled very soon, and all of you will be settlers, looking for a place to take you, just like when you came to Palestine." That protest outside of the synagogue in Montreal, where those words were cheered, this was actually an event that was put up, it was led and promoted by an anti-Zionist Jewish group called Independent Jewish Voices. They promoted it, they called it a Jewish-led event. So I put the question to them, like, do you support the speech that was given at your event? And here's what they told me in response. "We find these recordings disturbing, although rather surprising, since none of us heard any of this rhetoric at the demonstrations. We are actively looking into the videos in conversation with our community partners. IJV and our allies in the movement are clear that there is no room for anti-Semitism, misogyny, or any other form of bigotry in the movement." So what I have to duly note, Jan, is an alarming escalation, but both in terms of physical violence, in this instance from the pro-Israel side, which the police did do something about, and genocidal hate speech from both sides, which there's no reason based on news reporting to believe the authorities are dealing with at all.
It's happening so fast all the time, and it is escalating. And some of the demonstrators are on the different parts of the spectrum. Some are more extreme than others. I don't know what the answer is, except for good people to stand up and say that particular speech outside that particular synagogue in Montreal is not acceptable. The nail gun Zionist is not acceptable, but the police did arrest him and they did charge him. So then they need to, if you're going to utter death threats, I guess that's the line that cannot be accepted. That's where you have to start arresting people, right? That's what I think. I mean, I don't know what to think because it just keeps going. But you're right. Without anything stopping it, we're going to have violence. Duly noted.
This episode is brought to everybody by Calm. Jen, when you think of serenity, mindfulness, meditation, you think of me, right?
Always. Always.
I sometimes surprise myself with just how zen I am. No, I need help with this. This is a stressful and anxious time in the world. So having help from an app like Calm is a great help. It helps you to avoid like overthinking when you're trying to actually just calm down or meditate. Calm gives clarity because it clarifies exactly what I'm supposed to be doing when I'm trying to chill out. And if you are a person who meditates, this is going to help you to actually meditate instead of avoiding it and losing yourself in cyclical thoughts. But Calm isn't just for meditating. It's got stories, calming music, sleep meditations. It's an all-in solution for creating better habits, overcoming stress, and improving self-esteem. For listeners of this show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off of a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/CanadaLand. Go to calm.com/CanadaLand to get 40% off of unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/CanadaLand. Jan, our final sponsor for today's episode is Douglas. After a day of contending with the news, I need a good night's sleep, and a Douglas mattress can deliver. Are you on a first-name basis with your mattress? Do you know the name of your mattress, Jan?
No, I'm sorry. I've been very neglectful. I don't know my mattress's name.
Well, I'm really embarrassed for you, and you should be sorry.
It's humiliating. Every time I come on, I'm humiliated.
That's just how it works around here. Douglas is the first name in the hyper-competitive, cutthroat Canadian mattress industry. It's one of the fastest-growing brands in Canada. Listen, Canadian Living Magazine named Douglas its best mattress choice. I have tried these mattresses. I can tell you they feel just right. They are medium firm. They have a special EcoLite technology to make sure your mattress does not overheat. They are a high-quality sleep experience. That's what we're calling going to bed these days. And they're really affordable. Douglas has a great deal for Canada Land listeners. A free sleep bundle, which just sounds cozy, with every mattress you buy. Get sheets, pillows, mattress and pillow protectors free with your Douglas mattress purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Jan, we end today's episode on a somber note. A Canadian giant has passed.
We have some breaking news to share with you. Canada's 18th Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Brian Mulroney, has died.
On Parliament Hill, flags are lowered to half-mast and a book of condolences set out to mark the death of a Canadian political giant.
On this Friday night, honoring former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney.
He was a man of enormous gifts.
His undeniable influence on Canada and beyond.
The glorification continues in written headlines. Here's Globe and Mail editorial, Brian Mulroney, the last great Prime Minister. National Post, every politician found something to like about Brian Mulroney. Policy Magazine, a transcendent talent for friendship. The Toronto Star, Brian Mulroney knew the ravages of alcohol and was there for anyone struggling, including me. Ottawa Citizen, how I came to love former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney. Globe and Mail again, Canada's great deal maker. Brian Mulroney thought big, took risks, and played for keeps. National Post, the post-politics wit of Brian Mulroney. I'm going to go on.
No, stop, please, enough.
Again, CBC, A born politician with a gift for connecting. Tom Mulcair, he was one of a kind. Global News.
Oh, God.
The greatest PM in Atlantic Canada. Global News again. A transformational leader. Jen Wong, I had no idea. I'm, you know, condolences to the family. I don't mean to any disrespect.
Of course.
I had no idea.
No, and you know what? I'm getting a flashback. When Chairman Mao died, this is what happened. Everything was, he was the greatest ever, blah, 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 blah. No, no, no. This is ridiculous. Well, I'm speaking as a journalist. It's ridiculous. I don't understand what's going on with the Canadian media.
Now, let's be fair here, Jan, because, you know, journalists care about facts. And the facts are that Brian Mulroney's legacy was not just purely a one-sided campaign of glory. They're, you know, the Globe and Mail did say in a headline that he was one of the most divisive prime ministers, which seems to be just a point of fact when you think about the response to the GST and free trade. That's what they said in a headline in a tweet, that he was one of the most divisive prime ministers. And then they retracted it. They said it does not meet their editorial standards. They retracted the word. He was just divisive. He could have been divisive and right. But like, I remember that when the angry crowds on the streets of Canada were there protesting Brian Mulroney and free trade, calling him a traitor. And this is what it sounded like before he died. And we do this when politicians die in Canada. But before he died, Mulroney's relationship with the press did not sound quite as chummy or respectful. Here are some sounds over the years of Mulroney and the press.
Brian Mulroney, 1,584.
Brian Mulroney, the new Tory chief, made his first appearance as an MP. And it turned out to be quite a show.
What was demeaning, according to these jerks on the loony left, were the idea of two Irish guys singing When Irish Eyes Were Smiling on St. Patrick's Day. How silly and insecure can you be?
Mulroney referred to Bryce McAsee's appointment as ambassador to Portugal. His comment last Saturday was, "Let's face it, there's no whore like an old whore. If I had been in Bryce's position, I'd have been right in there with my nose in a public trough like the rest of them."
And I woke up the next morning, and there in 8-column headlines and the Toronto Star was the most vicious personal attack. The loony left, you know, you gotta love them. What a nutty bunch.
The Airbus Mulroney Karlheinz Schreiber saga, it must be running now longer than The Simpsons. Take a bow, Sideshow Bob.
Distinguished members of the press gallery, mesdames et messieurs, good evening. Peter Newman, go yourself. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and good night.
Jen, I believe you were working in the Globe and Mail newsroom throughout the Mulroney years. Do you remember that Mulroney, the one who told the journalist to go fuck himself?
Yeah, but I didn't really cover politics then. I remember him as an average Canadian remembers him. He's for free trade. He brought in the GST. He did fight apartheid. He led the international move, and that was excellent that he did that. But, you know, he was corrupt. I don't know why we don't say that. He took bags of cash. He put them in his safe. He did not report it to the tax people. And he's a trained lawyer. So he's corrupt, and we don't say that. Too bad that headline didn't say he was the most corrupt prime minister, and then they took it down.
You know, Jan, I know your political agenda, but this is a journalistic environment here, and we hew closely to facts. And the cash was not in bags; it was in envelopes.
Oh no, really?
Are you sure
it's not in a bag? Yeah, okay, envelope, because he put it in his shirt. That's right, in his jacket.
At least $225,000. I read somewhere $300,000.
Yeah, at least $225,000
delivered in a Manila envelope from a German arms dealer named Karlheinz Schreiber. Like, if you were writing a Simpsons cartoon about what corruption looks like, like, it was just so piddly and it was so embarrassing that the former Prime Minister of Canada, like, a well-compensated rest of his life, getting big checks from law firms and from consultation, like, no need to take down the office and the stature of the country for a Manila envelope payoff from Karlheinz Schreiber and attacking journalists for trying to get to the bottom of it.
By the way, they were $1,000 bills, which the Mint no longer prints because it was too easy for drug dealers and people like former prime ministers to take cash payments. So that's why you can't get a $1,000 bill anymore.
I come not to bury or to praise. I just feel like we can do both, or like you just tell what happened, which is like, yeah, that, like he does seem like, and I think that like sometimes time just does this. Like even George W. Bush started looking like more of a statesman in time. I mean, that's wild.
Well, relative to Trump, that's the only reason.
Yeah. So time will do this. What was the, I won't requote the old whore. Anyhow.
There's no whore like an old whore.
Look, I do get it that given the crop of politicians we have now, people are looking at Mulroney's passing and seeing like, he seems like a big figure. And a lot of this, you've just been living with him in your brain as a prime minister of history. But no, like it's worth remembering the stand he took on apartheid, which was not the stand that Reagan and Thatcher were taking. You know, he had moral leadership. Mm-hmm. He was a persuasive guy. He had this thing with journalists where he would like call you up and make you feel like you were his buddy and like talk your ear off.
So pathetic. Journalists are pathetic.
I think so. A skilled politician, definitely had more charisma and that baritone, you know, that you mentioned. Like, you know, I get why we have cause to remember, and we should. It's part of our own sort of like national pride to remember that we had leaders, but like he did some other stuff too.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this point about journalism, that we sort of lose our minds when someone dies. And I used to teach obituaries when I was teaching in Fredericton journalism. Mm-hmm. And everybody always thought, oh, you can't say anything bad of the dead. And that's what your Victorian era aunt would tell you. Do not speak ill of the dead. But an obituary is a news story.
Yes.
And it is not a paid by the family death notice. It's a story about a person's life. You have to adhere to the facts and it has to be balanced. And a balanced obituary of Brian Mulroney would say that he was divisive and that he was on the take. That was the name of Stevie Cameron's book. I mean, she did amazing reporting about him and, you know, they went after her for that.
They sure did. You know, the retraction is an embarrassment. To retract that story is an embarrassment.
It's an embarrassment. Why would the Globe retract a tweet that said he was divisive? He was divisive. He did win the biggest landslide in Canadian electoral history, but it didn't last very long. But that's so Canadian, right? And yet when he dies, we talk about this icon. And I don't think so. I think he was a man who won a big election and took money and did good things and bad things.
I think that any fair obituary would talk about his scandals and his failures. Like, you know, Meech Lake happened.
There's no excuse for the way they've written about Mulroney's death.
We tend to get carried away.
Yeah, we get carried away.
Jan, thank you for joining me. That was Shortcuts.
That was so much fun. Thank you for inviting me on.
Everybody, once again, stay tuned after the credits for a peek at the new season of Commons on Work. Listen, I can be emailed at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything people send. Jan Wong, where can people find you?
Well, they can write to me on my website, www.janwong.ca, or I'm still on Twitter. So embarrassing. @writerwong.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our production coordinator is Andre Proop, and our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. I'm going to ask you to do something different this week. If you value this podcast, tell someone about it. We have always grown our audience through our audience, through people telling others that, hey, there's this podcast out there. It's free. You might like it. And it would be incredibly helpful if listeners of Canada Land spread the word this month of March. And that's what I'm asking you to do. If you want to support us, go to canadaland.com/join. You can listen ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Okay, here it is. An advance listen to the first episode of the new season of Commons, Work.
Get your fucking ass up and work.
Workers don't get a lot of respect these days. We're too lazy, too unproductive, too entitled. But the reality is that over the last decade, it's been a pretty shitty time to be a worker. I'm Arshi Mann, and on this season of Commons, we're going to dissect the fascinating history and ever-changing present of what it means to be a worker in Canada. From the rise of gig work and temp agencies that have turned job security into a joke, to giant corporations wringing out every ounce of profit by exploiting temporary foreign workers and international students, to the relentless attacks against all of our wages, benefits, and even basic working conditions. We'll be going deep into the trenches of the ongoing war on workers. We'll ask the question, who and what is to blame? And we'll show you the many, many ways that workers have banded together to fight back. Follow Commons wherever you get your podcasts.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.